You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
This is the Locked On Jets podcast for Monday, October 19th, 2020. I'm your host, John B. from gangrenenation.com, and today's episode is brought to you by Pepsi. This football season is different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. And it's very difficult to watch the Jets this season, but Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. We're here to recap another Jets loss. They were defeated yesterday by the Dolphins 24-0 in Miami. It was pretty much the outcome most of us were expecting. And we're to the point where this is just such an unenjoyable team to watch that I get the feeling I'm watching these games so that you don't have to. I talk to a lot of Jets fans, and it's amazing how many Jets fans just are not following this team anymore. This game was another non-competitive performance for the Jets. Now, they came out, and they had a quick three and out. They received the opening kickoff. But I actually did not mind the first series because they took a couple shots deep to Breshad Perriman. And Joe Flacco threw one that was a pretty good ball, and Perriman just took a really bad route to it. He should have had it. It should have been a big play. So the Jets go three and out. I don't mind it. I mind Perriman whiffing on the one deep ball that he should have caught, but I'm like, okay, the Jets are being a little aggressive here. Then the defense forces a three and out, and I'm feeling like, okay, maybe the Jets are going to play a competitive game today. Very foolish thought, by the way. Jets go three and out again. Then the Dolphins go eight plays for a 66-yard touchdown drive. Ryan Fitzpatrick finds Adam Shaheen for a 4-yard touchdown. So it's 7-0 Miami, and you kind of feel like, here we go. Then the Jets generate a little bit of offense on the next series. Joe Flacco hits Ryan Griffin for 9 yards. He hits Braxton Berrios for 18 yards. Berrios does a nice job breaking a couple tackles. Then Adam Gase draws up his patented Adam Gase drive-ending play calling. A screen to Breshad Perriman, a wide receiver screen for 2 yards. A patented second and long run, LaMichael Perine, 1 yard. Then a penalty by Chuma Edoga, a false start. So it's 3rd and 12. And the Jets run this play, which has nothing going. And the Dolphins bail them out. Dolphins bail them out on an illegal contact. The Jets get an automatic first down. And they keep moving the ball. They actually get the ball to the Miami 24. And then follows a 3-play sequence, which kind of just shows you what's been the story of the season. It shows you why we're in Rich Kotite territory with this team. Because the Kotite days were not just about bad football. They were about, like, not being able to believe what you were seeing on your screen. 3rd and 2, Flacco finds Breshad Perriman for a 9-yard gain in the first down, but it gets wiped off because Ryan Griffin gets called for offensive pass interference. They ran a rub route. Rub route's when you're supposed to kind of pick a defender to free somebody up against man coverage. The thing is, you're supposed to make it look natural. You're supposed to make running into the defender look like it was an accident. Ryan Griffin looked like he was trying to throw a block. He really looked like he was trying to throw a block. Obvious call. So we get to 3rd and now it's 3rd and 12. And now the Jets are in some trouble. And Flacco steps forward, and he's either trying to change the protection or change the play or something. And the Jets snap the ball, and he's not ready for it. And he has to fall on it for a 2-yard loss. Yeah, just unbelievable. And there's also a penalty on the play, which the Dolphins decline, because Flacco was stepping forward as the ball was snapped. You're not allowed to have anybody moving towards the line of scrimmage forward as the ball snaps. So the Jets actually got an illegal motion penalty, which was obviously declined because the play went for a loss. The Jets had to fall on it. Then Braden Mann punts it. And you think the Jets are punting it. They can't mess this up. But they do, because Vincent Smith whiffs on an opportunity to down it deep in Miami territory inside the 5. And Harvey Longy gets called for a face mask. So it ends up being a touch. So instead of having the Dolphins pinned inside their 5-yard line, the Dolphins get it on their 35, because you get the touchback and the face mask. Dolphins put together a touchdown drive. Fitzpatrick to Preston Williams for 3 yards, touchdown 14-0. And then near the end of the first half, the Dolphins put together a quick 3-play, 47-yard touchdown drive. They busted another coverage on another Fitzpatrick touchdown pass. It was 21-0 at halftime. And the Dolphins actually missed an opportunity right before the half, because Fitzpatrick threw an interception right as the Dolphins were driving. They were inside the red zone, and Fitzpatrick threw an interception pass that was picked off by Brian Poole. And yeah, that was pretty much the game. It was 21-0 at halftime. I'll say this. The Jets went out in the second half, and the defense played hard. And it says a lot about where the Jets are right now that my praise for them is, hey, a couple guys, one of the units on this team played hard. Marcus May had a spectacular interception. In fact, it actually reminded me of an interception Darrelle Revis had under very different circumstances 11 years ago. It was a playoff game in San Diego in the divisional round where the ball kind of bounced around. And May did a great job. I mean, May pinned it like against his back. The ball had kind of went behind him, and May had a great interception. And there were guys who were playing hard in this game. I thought Steve McClendon played hard in the second half, who is now a former member of the New York Jets. We'll talk about that later. Neville Hewitt played hard. I mean, the defense played hard, and the defense played terribly, but at least they played hard in the second half, in spite of taking, and they took some dumb penalties in the first half again, which has been kind of their trademark this year. But I guess, you know, if, to the extent I could say something good, the defense played hard, the offense looked like a complete mess. And as I always say, like I probably talked to as many Jets fans as anybody, and I can't get over how many people last week came away feeling that Joe Flacco played a competent game against the Arizona Cardinals. And people were saying that he ran the offense better than Sam Darnold did. I don't want to defend the jobs Darnold has done this year, but I could not figure out how anybody could have come away from that game against Arizona last weekend thinking Flacco played a competent game. The only thing I can figure out is, like, he didn't commit any turnovers. So I guess maybe even though he didn't really make any big plays, people are saying, well, he protected the football. Well, that was not the case in this game. I mean, he was just putting the ball up for grabs, especially in the second half. He threw one interception. He probably could have had two or three. And some of the plays he made were ridiculous. I mean, there was a sequence where the Jets were driving. It was near the end of the third quarter, and they have a 3rd-and-1 on the Miami 24, and they run a bootleg. And Flacco, the Dolphins figure it out, and this play is pretty much finished. And Flacco takes an intentional grounding penalty, which takes you from 3rd-and-1 to 4th-and-14. I mean, at the very least, you have to find a receiver in the area. You can't take a big loss in that play because you're still in 4th-and-1. It's not the worst thing in the world if you throw it near an intended receiver or you get outside the pocket. But Flacco did not have the athleticism to get outside the pocket. And I'm still not sure. Like, I got to be honest with you, I have to watch that play over because the way it was designed, it's kind of tough to believe the Jets did not send a receiver in the area where Flacco threw the ball. I don't know where the ball was supposed to go, so I had to watch it again. But Flacco can't take that penalty. But then 4th-and-14 from the Miami 37-yard line, the Jets try a 55-yard field goal. And that doesn't really make a lot of sense because at this point, the score is 24-0. And it's a 55-yard field goal. It's not like it was a 30-yard field goal where it's a chip shot. That's a tough kick. At that point, you're down 24. Why are you trying a desperation field goal? At least go for it. But that was nothing compared to what Flacco did in the fourth quarter, which was, this was the biggest loss on a sack in the NFL in 9 years. I think Tim Tebow was the last player to have a loss as big. Flacco took a 28-yard loss on a 3rd-and-4 on a sack. I mean, that's what the Jets offense was. He took a 28-yard loss. How does that happen? It was just, I mean, that was the story of the game for the Jets. On offense, you know, not surprisingly, without Le'Veon Bell, the game plan revolved around Frank Gore. 15 touches for Gore. Michael Pirine, who was supposed to be a big part of the offense, you know, Adam Gase talked all week, only had 9. And this was the other thing. I mean, this was the other thing that drives you crazy a little bit if you're a Jets fan. Ty Johnson steps into the lineup, and he's a guy your name you probably don't know, but he steps in at running back. In the fourth quarter, breaks an 8-yard run. Then the next play, he breaks a 34-yard run, shows some speed. And listen, I don't think Ty Johnson's the savior of this offense, but you're at a point where you're just desperate. Your offense has done nothing all year. You're desperate. You're trying to grasp onto any reason for hope. This kid comes in and rips off a couple big runs. He shows some speed, shows some playmaking ability. That's all you have on offense. He gets one carry the rest of the game. I mean, it shows you kind of the situation the Jets are in. And, I mean, I could go on, but it's pretty much the same story. It's just they find new ways to look really bad. And ahead here on the Locked On Jets podcast, we're going to talk about coaching once again, because what else can you talk about at this point? It can be awkward or embarrassing to talk about erectile dysfunction, but Roman is here to get you the advice you want and the help you need with no shame. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship you real medicine with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOn and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be difficult to talk about, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect to a doctor and take care of it. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOn to get up to $50 off your first month of ED treatment, a free online visit, free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOn for up to $50 off your first month of ED treatment. GetRoman.com/LockedOn. Locked On Jets podcast. After another Jets loss, they are now 0-6. In fact, they are now the only winless team in the NFL after they were defeated yesterday 24-0 by the Miami Dolphins. Now, I think we all know that the Jets have a lot of personnel issues. This roster is one of the worst rosters in the NFL. It might be the worst roster in the NFL. But I think we are well past the point where you can just say that the roster is the only problem here. It may not even be the biggest problem, even though it might be the worst in the NFL. And I wrote about this after the game, but watching this game, I could not help but think about the team the Jets were playing. It was the Miami Dolphins, of course, Adam Gase's former team. But I thought about last year's version of the Dolphins. And entering the 2019 season, the Miami Dolphins had what many people thought was one of the worst collections of players in NFL history. There was talk about them potentially going 0-16, and they got off to a terrible start. They started 0-7, and they were blown out the first couple games. They weren't even close the first couple of games. It was a really, really bad collection of players. But what the Dolphins had last year, they had a coaching staff that got people to buy in, they got people to work hard, and they held people accountable. And over the course of the season, you saw the Dolphins start to improve. As we got into the month of October, they were still losing games, but where they were getting crushed in September, they were playing competitive football. They were coming close to winning in October. And then, of course, last year, you may remember, they got their first win against the New York Jets. And they ended up finishing the year 5-11. And obviously, that was not a very good football team, but it was a team that showed you that an untalented roster can go out and at least be competitive in the NFL. An untalented roster can go out and at least improve during the course of the season. And the reason that's striking is that I think it's very easy to look at the Jets roster and say that this coaching staff has no chance. But if the Miami Dolphins last year, and that Dolphins team is no worse in talent than this current Jets team, if that Miami Dolphins team could go out and be competitive and play hard, this Jets team, you should be able to expect that from this Jets team. You should expect them to at least go out there and every couple weeks be competitive. And that's not what you're getting from this team. The only competitive game they've played is against a Denver team that was playing its number three quarterback a couple weeks ago. And it's not just that, but you see the things that happen on the field. Now, I know the Jets don't have good NFL players, but just by being in the NFL, you're better than like 99% of, over 99% of other human beings on the planet when it comes to football playing ability. And the Jets are, there are points where guys on the Jets look like they haven't stepped on a football field before. I mean, I mentioned one of those sequences earlier in the game where they commit the ridiculous penalty with Ryan Griffin. Flacco is not ready for the snap. They commit a penalty on the punt. And there were so many instances during this game. There was a kickoff. Vincent Smith couldn't catch it. I remember thinking last week with Chris Herndon, because Herndon, who has done nothing this year, has looked at times like a guy who's never set foot on a football field before. But the thing is, I realized during this game, there are so many players that look that way for the Jets. And I think it shows you that this team is just not doing, you know, Adam Gase is talking about how well they practice. That's might be the most disturbing thing, because there's no way you could tell me this team is practicing well. If you go back to week one, that game against Buffalo, they looked totally unprepared for that game. And during the course of the season, it's really started to look like these guys are just mailing it in. I don't see how you can get a performance like that. So many dismal individual performances. If guys are actually preparing during the week, it seems like there's not a lot of work being done. It seems like, I mean, I'm just not seeing the, I did see the effort in the second half from the defense, but on the whole, the effort's just not there. And even on the defensive side of the ball, in that first half, I mean, I saw busted coverages. Two of the three touchdowns Miami had were busted coverages. I saw guys not fulfilling their assignments and gaps. And ultimately, I think it comes back to coaching. And I go back to the Kotite days, because when Rich Kotite was the head coach of the New York Jets, it wasn't just that they were a bad football team. It's that you saw things that you'd never thought you'd see on an NFL field. And that's what I'm seeing these days with the Jets. 93 yards of offense in the first half. Jets did not we got into the fourth quarter before there was a first down. There was a first down conversion on third down. They lined up offsides on the punt. I mean, these are just basic things that you wouldn't expect a college team to do. And the Jets are doing this. And it's just like, this is almost like not an NFL team right now. This is a blooper reel. That's what this team is right now. It's just, I said that during the game, during the sequence where the drive was ended on the Griffin penalty and the Flacco, on the snap Flacco wasn't ready for, and the punt where they had the face mask and failed to down it inside the five. That's what this team is now. This is a blooper reel. And ultimately, you know, people ask, well, what's the, you know, why should the Jets make a coaching change? And it's because it's obvious when you watch this team, these guys are not ready during the week. These guys are not preparing themselves during the week to win. And Gase can say whatever he wants. These guys are so unprepared when it comes to Sunday that they don't even look like they've ever set foot on a football field before. And what would get better? Look, I don't know that the team's going to win a lot of games, but the team certainly would prepare better under a different coach heading into this week. And I think the fact that the best argument I've heard all week, and I've heard it from a lot of people, the best argument I've heard all week to keep Gase is simply that people want the Jets to keep losing so they get the number one overall draft pick and either get Trevor Lawrence or are able to trade down and get a lot of picks in return. And that's the argument for keeping him right now. I don't have any doubt that under a new coach, this team would at least look better prepared. Again, maybe not good. Last year's Dolphins team was not good. But a collection of NFL players, no matter how bad they are in the NFL, if you prepare them, you get them to work hard, you get them to buy in, you're going to get better results than this. This just looks like a bunch of guys who are frankly mailing it in. It doesn't look like they're getting ready during the week, and they're certainly not ready to play on Sunday. And although the Jets are not talented, this collection of players can do better than this, I'm convinced. Built Bar is the best-tasting protein bar ever, and the new Built Bar is even more delicious. There are now 18 amazing flavors. There are 6 new flavors in addition to the 12 originals. Bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they're soft and easy to chew. Bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber. Peanut butter has 19 grams protein, 180 calories, 5 grams sugar, 5 grams net carbs, while cookies and cream has 17 grams protein, 130 calories, 4 grams sugar, 4 grams net carbs. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON, one word, LOCKEDON, for 20% off at BuiltBar, BuiltBar.com. Locked On Jets podcast the day after the Jets lose to the Miami Dolphins 24-0. Now, shortly after the game, a trade was reported. Nose tackle Steve McClendon is on his way to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Jets really did not get much in return. They are getting a 2022 sixth round pick, but they're also sending a 2023 seventh round pick with McClendon to Tampa Bay. So it's McClendon and a 2023 seventh round pick to Tampa Bay, a 2022 sixth round pick to the Jets. So essentially the Jets move up around and get a pick 1 year earlier. They turn a seventh round pick into a sixth round pick 1 year earlier. So obviously not a big trade for the Jets. Happy for Steve McClendon because he's been a class act with this team. There's been a lot of talk about what a good leader he is in the locker room. So I'm happy he's going to go somewhere where he's going to have a chance to win. But I do think this is probably the right move for the Jets. I think the Jets are at a point where you have to decide whether anybody's got a future with your team. And if a player doesn't have a future with your team, and I think McClendon clearly is the type of guy who really doesn't have a future with the Jets because he's near the end of his career and they have a lot of young defensive linemen, you get what you can for them. Now, I think there are other guys who probably have more value. McClendon is an old, two-down interior defensive lineman. Those guys don't have a ton of value in the NFL, so I'm not surprised the Jets got very little in return for him, but it's something. And we know McClendon probably was not going to be here, if not next year, then the year beyond that. So at least you got something in return for him. Now, I think there are some other guys who could potentially bring the Jets more back in a trade. You know, Jamison Crowder is a guy who Jets could look to deal before the deadline. And again, part of this is, and it's something you don't know. Do the Jets view these players as part of their long-term core? You know, Jamison Crowder is a guy, I wonder, will he be around here in the future? He has a big cap number next year. Although he's played very well this year, I don't think his cap number really lines up with what he brings to the table. The Jets are going to have to make a decision on Marcus May soon. Are they going to give him an extension? If not, then they should probably look to get what they can for him. So I think there are going to be other decisions that will need to be made. But I think ultimately, if you're the Jets right now, it goes without saying this season is probably over. You're probably looking at a coaching change. I mean, I think that the odds are probably better than 50-50. I'm not saying it's a guarantee. And this is not, by the way, this is not insider information. This is just my guess. I think the odds are probably a little bit better. I'd say maybe 60-40 that tomorrow, the subject of Tuesday's podcast is going to be breaking down Adam Gase's firing. And if it's not, if Adam Gase remains the coach, we know he's not going to be here much longer. So essentially, you're looking at the future for the Jets right now. And I think that that means really evaluating who's going to be part of this team going forward. If you're not going to be part of this team going forward and you have any sort of trade value, the Jets should try and get what they can for these players. I thought that was one of the mistakes they made last year is they needed to make a decision on Robbie Anderson. And if they had decided, it seemed like they decided Robbie Anderson was not part of their future, they should have tried to trade him at the deadline and at least get something in return for him, because Robbie Anderson went to Carolina, is playing really well, and the Jets get nothing in exchange for him. So I think the Jets should be looking to make more deals like the one they made with McClendon on Sunday. Anyway, that's all for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy our show, subscribe to it and leave it a good review. I hope you have a good Monday, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow to talk more Jets.